summertime is coming and it's time to hopefully get back out to the beaches, be able to enjoy life a little bit more than we have the past couple of years. But the Great Lakes are certainly a source of concern because of the erosion, but also a recent study came out about meteo tsunamis. What in the world are those? Joining us on the phone right now is Eric J. Anderson. He's a physical scientist at the NOAA Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory. Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. So explain to me a meteo tsunami, meteorological tsunami. That's what that's short for, right?
Correct. Yeah, so when we hear the word tsunami, generally what I think people picture is the type of wave that's generated by an earthquake out in the ocean. And that's one type of tsunami. So tsunami just means a long wave that's generated from some source at a distance from you and then moves away from that source. And in the ocean, that moves towards the coastline and can impact coastal communities. And really in the Great Lakes and around the world, there's another type of tsunami that's generated not by an earthquake or seismic activity, but by the weather itself, so the meteorological conditions above that body of water. And really what this is the same type of wave is generated, although generally smaller than our earthquake-driven tsunamis. But what happens is the energy is put into the water from the atmosphere, from things like a thunderstorm or a squall line that's used to generate that wave in the water. And that wave travels just like it does from an earthquake-driven tsunami. It can travel towards the coastline and impact coastal communities.
And what generally happens when that does? I mean, you know, we remember the huge tsunami from over a decade ago that devastated countries and just killed, both in Japan and the other big famous tsunami, I guess, that we have video footage of. On the Great Lakes, we don't get things like that. Is it more a problem of, A, if people happen to be in the water, and B, damage to the to the shoreline, or can it do much more than that?
No, that's about the extent of it. So for dangerous meteo tsunamis that we would see in the Great Lakes, to give you a sense of size, some of the biggest meteo tsunamis that we have on record are waves of about 5 or 6 feet tall. So that's quite large for one of these waves. But they're also, we call them long waves, which means from front to back, if a wave's coming at you, they can be a few miles long. And when you look at that amount of water, that's really where the danger comes. That's a lot of water being moved into the shoreline. So even though it's much smaller than these earthquake-driven tsunamis, it still poses a danger to essentially people that are in the water right at the beach or along the shoreline. Some of the historical cases we've seen, you know, lead to dangerous currents that can cause drownings or can wash people off of piers or breakwalls, as well as damage docks and kind of near shore infrastructure.
Do you remember how large the wave was with the tsunami, either in Indonesia in 2004 or after the earthquake off Japan a decade ago?
I don't know those sizes offhand, but yeah, you know, I do know the earthquakes that generated those were just have a tremendous amount of energy that they're putting into creating these waves at a much different scale than the energy that say a meteo tsunami, the weather is putting into the water. And so we're not talking anything close to that scale, but you know, still dangerous, still hazardous, even if rare here in the Great Lakes.
Because when I think about when you say 3 to 6 feet, I think of, well, surfing videos in California. Sometimes it seems like those guys are on bigger than 6 foot waves, right?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, the important with these long waves is that they may only be, you know, they could even be a foot tall, and that can still be dangerous. It's really the length of these long waves. So, you know, when I'm talking, something might be, I think in kilometers. So we often say that these meteo tsunami waves are between 5 and 10 kilometers long. So I guess that's, you know, anywhere between 3 and 6 miles long. And so if you just multiply that out, the volume of water that's coming in, that's really where the danger comes. So it's not so much the height. We get higher waves, even in the Great Lakes, that people can surf in the wintertime, that are much taller, but they're really short. They may be only a few feet long. And so that there's really a big scale difference between long waves, which are these meteo tsunami type, and what we just generally call wind waves, which are the kind you would see at the beach breaking. Those can be, you know, they can be threatening and dangerous if you're swimming there in the water. but they're not going to cause a flood of the shoreline like a tsunami wave will.
With tsunamis, there's such a warning system with the International Ocean Tsunamis. There's a big warning system now because there's an earthquake, and so you can trigger a warning. There's time. How are you predicting and finding out that you can predict the meteo tsunamis?
That's really been the difficulty. So you're right. In the tsunami world, in the ocean, there are sensors that can detect earthquakes, of course, and that can give us some sense of the possibility for a tsunami wave being generated. But there is also the system that NOAA and others have deployed where there are actually buoys that are out in the ocean that can detect if a tsunami wave rides by it. If that rides past, it detects that, and it can give us a warning that one is on its way to a coastline. So it's really not a forecast as much as it's a warning based on detection. In the Great Lakes, we don't have those. The Great Lakes, they're so small. I mean, they're large bodies of water, but they're small enough that by the time you would detect and relay that information, the wave has likely already impacted some stretch of the coastline. So we really are working towards trying to forecast these types of events. And they're difficult to do that. Weather forecasting in itself is a difficult thing. And, to be able to forecast that and relay that information fast enough before that wave hits the shore, which again is a particular problem here in the Great Lakes, that's something that's actively being worked on. And, as of this date right now, we don't have a meteo tsunami forecast.
You mentioned that the Great Lakes in aspect to the oceans, of course, are relatively small, even though they seem incredibly large to us. But so I wonder if we think about that every action has an equal and opposite reaction in a small body of water. If this meteo tsunami reaches the shore, what happens then? Does it start heading back the other way? What happens once it hits the shore?
Yeah, this is a great point. So the Great Lakes, well, I should say, meteo tsunamis happen all around the world. They're a big problem in the Mediterranean and in Asia and other places. The Great Lakes is a particular hotspot. The east coast of the U.S. also sees meteo tsunamis on occasion. The particular hazard in the Great Lakes is because they're enclosed, you get this. I like to think about it as a pinball effect. So when a meteo tsunami wave is generated, it'll hit the shoreline on, say, one part of the lake. Let's picture Lake Michigan. If that wave is generated and hits the eastern side of Lake Michigan, it doesn't just disappear. It reflects off that shoreline and comes back towards the other side. So it can come back towards, say, Wisconsin and hit that shoreline several hours later. And the dangerous part really is because at this time, it's now disconnected with that storm that generated it. So, you might be prone to get out of the water when a thunderstorm goes overhead. But 6 hours later, when that thunderstorm is long gone, it could be sunny, calm conditions. And out of nowhere, here comes this wave that was reflected or, pinballed around in the lake. It really catches people off guard. That's when these are most dangerous, and that's often when we see, most of the injury or fatality.
We're speaking to Eric J. Anderson. He's a physical scientist with the NOAA Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory. And what he was mentioning just now is that deceptiveness. The storm comes, the storm goes away, so we get back in the water. How do meteo tsunamis relate to rip currents and undertow? How does climate change affect all this? And how does all of this go hand in hand or affect the ongoing erosion that we've had around the Great Lakes and our beach areas? We'll have more with Eric Anderson next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Eric J. Anderson, physical scientist with NOAA in the Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory, talking about meteo tsunamis, which, like me, you probably hadn't heard of until very recently, as they're trying to figure out ways to predict these more. Eric, you mentioned that, the storm comes, everybody gets out of the water, storm goes away, people say, okay, it's time to get back in the water. But these meteo tsunamis can come after that and later than that, or reflect back after that. How do these relate, or what's the correlation with the words rip current and undertow?
Well, what we found actually in some recent work was that some rip current events in the Great Lakes that have led to drownings have been tied back to being initiated by a meteo tsunami wave. And even in cases where the meteo tsunami wave itself was not all that destructive, but it was just strong enough to create some dangerous currents in the near shore and set up rip currents and that actually initiate those, which then became a danger to swimmers. So we have, we have a few studies that make the link between rip currents that we see in the lakes and some of these meteo tsunami triggers. So we know that that's one of the dangers that a meteo tsunami wave brings. How often rip currents are caused by medial tsunamis is still an open question, but we know the link exists.
How do we know when rip currents are in effect?
Well, so rip currents are, you know, they're a big danger along the ocean coast as well as here in the Great Lakes. They can be, you know, spotted sometimes by just a signature in the water. If you can see some movement of the current, you know, either by looks of the waves or some sand or sediment transport, you can just visually see that rips are happening. Those generally aren't the medial tsunami kinds that we're talking about. When the medial tsunami wave comes in, essentially it looks like a very rapid flood and then basically retreat of water over a few minutes, something like 10 to 20 minutes. And as you can imagine, if you're moving in that much water that's flooding the near shore and then ripping back out, you know, it's actually going to create these dangerous currents. That might not be visible because it might just look like a very chaotic type event that's going on at the shoreline. But with that, you would obviously see really strong currents that could pull people back into the water as that wave retreats. So it can be a hard thing to see the actual rip currents themselves. But along with that, you would clearly be able to notice that rapid flood or that change in water level at the shoreline. And I should mention this doesn't necessarily look like the Hollywood poster of a breaking tsunami wave. In fact, a lot of these waves don't have a break to them. And again, it just looks like a rapid flood more so than a wave. So that can be a little bit tricky to tease apart exactly what's happening, but you still might notice there's something changing in the near shore here. That spells danger. I'm just going to step out of the water for a few minutes. That's really your best bet.
So in some ways, instead of it being the Hollywood style, holy cow, look at this gigantic 10-foot wave coming, it's more like the bathtub is overflowing. It sneaks up on you.
Absolutely. That's what it looks like. More cases in the Great Lakes that look like that than something with even a small break to it.
Now, you guys are doing a lot of research on this, trying to figure out how to predict them. It sounds like it's not the type of thing that happens all the time, like that we're freaking out about. But when it does happen, people can die very rapidly. There's some famous instances over the years of 7 people drowning all of a sudden at once because this suddenly happens. So as you're doing the research, is there concern that you really need to figure out how to predict this? Because with climate change, you think we're going to start seeing these more often? Where do you think we're headed with that?
Well, I'll first say that we now know enough about the conditions, the ingredients that go into making a medial tsunami, that weather forecasters within NOAA can be watching the forecasts, watching the skies, watching the radar for those ingredients. So they can say conditions are right for a possible medial tsunami. They can then watch water level gauges to see if one is initiated. So we can still put out some kind of warning of general dangerous or hazardous conditions at the shoreline. That's great, a great first step while we wait to build a forecast. But where we're going with potential impacts from climate change is a great question. We're still studying exactly where we think things might lead. But the way it looked in the past is peak medial tsunami timing in the Great Lakes tends to be around April and May. That's when we see most of the storms that initiate medial tsunamis, particularly in Lake Michigan and Lake Erie. And as you know, peak recreational time when people are out in the water tends to be, you know, June, July, August, maybe even September. So we have a separation of really the peak events and kind of peak use or exposure of the public at the shoreline. What we think climate change might lead to is not necessarily an increase in, say, intensity or size of medial tsunamis, although that could happen. It's still an open question. But what we think we see evidence for is a movement of that timing of when medial tsunamis are hitting. So we could see increased number of medial tsunamis in June or July when people are out there in the water to be impacted. And if we look back at what that might lead to, if we look back at historical cases, when medial tsunamis have hit, say, in July, we oftentimes see those leading to injury or death. When they hit in April, like this big one hit in 2018 in Lake Michigan, there was nobody in the water to be impacted, so it looked really cool. It was fun to study. Didn't cause any damage. If that hits in July, it probably, you know, washes a number of people off the pier.
So I guess we can be thankful that the Great Lakes are freezing for a lot of the year.
Exactly.
And we don't want to be in them. Well, explain to me then, or tell me what you can about erosion. We've seen different stories all the time about, especially here in Chicago, beaches that are getting washed away, and what do we do about them, and how do we bring them back? And I know when I've been down to Mexico many times over the years after hurricanes, suddenly the resorts have very little beach left. Where are we at with our lakes and erosion and whether they're rising or receding?
So, you know, erosion is a result of a lot of the wave action and current action that's going on in the lakes. And when I say waves, generally the wind waves, the kind of waves you can see with your eye, the ones that people are surfing or playing in when they go down to the beach, that process is occurring all the time. These media tsunami waves, play a role in there. They're one type of wave, but they're infrequent enough that, the leading cause of erosion is going to be these wind type waves and sometimes current movement, say from rivers and things like that. Really where we're looking towards with the connection to erosion is, decrease in ice cover in the Great Lakes. So in the wintertime when we have some of our stormiest conditions, meaning, strongest winds, the ice can act along the shoreline can actually act like a barrier, a safety, a buffer between, say, the wind and the shoreline and the sand below or the sediments below. When with less ice or if ice isn't present out there, that wind's going to create waves that are just going to pound that shoreline and increased erosion. And so we see this connection between, say, decreasing ice trends in the Great Lakes and likely increase in erosion. And that problem really gets worse as you see, water level changes too in the lake. So if the lake level goes up, those waves can intrude further inshore than they could before when with lower lake levels. That leads to erosion of, beaches and property that maybe weren't eroded at a lower lake level condition. That's really the thing that we're tracking and trying to get a hold of. Media tsunamis or those types of conditions play a piece in that, but I would say not a large role.
So let's just wrap up with some quick tips as people are headed to the beach this summer. What do you want them until you can get to a better system of reporting and figuring out and predicting? What should people, as they head off for a day at the beach, be aware of?
Well, of course, always listen to weather forecasts, beach hazard forecasts, lifeguards that are there. They're the ones with the information that can give you warning of, any dangerous conditions that they might be aware of. But when you're at the water itself, if you see stormy skies, stormy conditions, take a moment, back off, assess, if this is something that's going to pass or not. And then, as I said, sometimes these meteor tsunamis can come out of nowhere, seemingly. It's important to remember that, one, dangerous ones are extremely rare. So, I'm going down to the beach. I'm not worried about a meteor tsunami in the back of my mind. But if you do notice that the water level is pretty rapidly increasing or decreasing, I would say in a significant way over a few minutes, then something's going on. Maybe it's safest to get out of the water for about 20 minutes, go to the bathroom, go get a drink, go get something to eat, and then reassess the situation. In that case, you can avoid these altogether.
Eric Anderson is a physical scientist at the NOAA Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory. Of course, you can find more at NOAA.gov. Eric, thank you so much for coming on the phone tonight.